Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. As strong supporters of the American Kennel Club, we talk about everything from conformation to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between. Your passion is our purpose. Tremendous thanks to our sponsor, Royal Canin. Every day, more top breeders are choosing Royal Canin. Join the winning team. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and we have a very special guest today, Peggy Beisel McIlwain, who is a American Kennel Club judge. She is a breeder of Wire Fox Terriers and Cairn Terriers and was recently nominated for Judge of the Year in the what used to be the Winkies.
Yep, I don't know what they're calling them now.
Show Dog of the Year Awards, that's it. Welcome, Peggy.
Well, thank you for having me, Laura. And we did breed Wires and Cairns, and now we live with a couple Bull Terriers and are enamored by them.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I had not heard that particular advance. Very cool.
Yeah. I sleep with two of them.
Do you have white Bull Terriers or colored Bull Terriers?
We have one of each. Our male, who's 10 years old, is colored, and the bitch is white.
Wow, very cool. So give us the 411. Give us a little bit of a background. I mean, you've been at this a long time. You have some wonderful stories I'm very excited to get to. So how did you get started in this bit?
Well, we always had a purebred dog. They were never show quality. I was raised by a collie. And then when she died, we got a field golden who took me through my teenage and adolescent years and crises. And in high school, one of my sisters and her husband ended up getting an Old English sheepdog and went to dog shows with, I think his name was Wally. And I became very good friends with the breeders that they got Wally from, and that's who I got my first show dog from. So I got started late. I bought her when I graduated from high school, and she was born in 74, so I graduated in 73, but now everybody knows how old I am. So that's how I got started going to dog shows. And when I was in college, I went to the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and I was going to classes less and less and dog shows more and more and changed my major so many times that I thought, well, I'm going to take a break from college. And I got a job with Terrier Master George Ward in 1977 after I finished my Old English and fell in love with terriers and never looked back.
And that is the one that I'm excited. George Ward, I'm not sure how many of our listeners remember George Ward. I personally never met him. I only read about him and heard about him. And the legend that was George Ward, I think, is sort of an important mentor to talk about.
Well, it was great. He really had a special bond with the dogs. And one time he said, I was a great student because I didn't have any bad habits unlearned. Because I came from an Old English sheepdog and didn't know anything about stripping terriers, but fell in love with the terriers as soon as I walked into the kennel. I actually met him at a show in Wisconsin. I was working weekends for Connie Gertzner, now Connie Miller, meeting her at shows and helping her out. And George was at a show and he needed an assistant. And I had been talking to other people about full-time jobs, never intending to be a professional handler, but wanting to learn more about the proper care about dogs and breeding, because I fully intended to become an Old English sheepdog breeder. And then when I met him, he was looking for help, and I went and interviewed at his place, and his place was immaculate. And I thought, yeah, I can work here, because I had visited a couple other kennels, and there was just no way I was going to live there. So in the early summer of 77, I went to work for George, and I stayed there until Actually, Mount St. Helens erupted the same time that I quit. It was about the same time. It was May of 1980. So that's when I left his employment. He wasn't an easy person to work with, but I'm glad I learned terriers from him because I didn't learn any shortcuts. Anybody who shows to me knows I don't like the terriers run in the ring. They're not bred to be raced around the ring. And to see a proper movement, you've got to see them at the right speed, not racing around the ring. So that's where that comes from. I always tell them I'm old school.
I like that.
Yeah.
So George was certainly famous and well known for being, again, that connection with the dog. I remember hearing a story many, many years ago. I don't remember from who, honestly, maybe Dennis Springer, about him like talking to the dogs in the ring and how he would just carry on a conversation with them.
You know, he told me three things when I first started working for him when I'd go in the ring. First of all, never keep your hands in your pocket. It makes you look like you're not serious. And he said, never chew gum in the ring. And the third one, which has always stuck with me, is talk to the dogs in the ring. Don't let them think you're in there alone. And when I judge junior showmanship, I like to see the kids talking to the dogs in the ring. And they do respond. They want to hear your voice. You got to talk to them loud enough so they can hear. Some of those buildings can be pretty loud. So yes, definitely talk to the dogs in the ring. But I loved it. He said, don't let them think they're in there by themselves.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
What are some of your other either major memories or sort of lessons that you came away with from somebody that a lot of people think was pretty much the master of terriers?
Well, obviously the proper trimming and care of the dogs. His kennel was clean. Dogs came first. We'd go to a show, and if it was too hot, we'd just go back home. The dogs came first, and that should be of utmost importance. And there were times I left shows because it was too hot. If the dogs aren't going to be safe, then it's not worth it. And most of his clients always understood that, and I think appreciated it, obviously. But the grooming and the care of the dogs is number one. I used to love all the old stories. He and Dick Cooper were good friends, and we'd always be set up with them and at dinner and talking. And I remember Ed Bracey and Bob Braithwaite and Bob Waters and soak up all the stories and Jack Funk's stories. I mean, just hysterical, some of them. But I was like a sponge, just eating it all up. It was great.
Right. And that was sort of a different era, too. I think that our entire world, not just dog shows, are a little more politically correct these days.
Yeah, it's gotten to be a little too stiff sometimes. Got to have a little fun. And I think that's one of the things that's happened to our sport. Now, because of political correctness, we've taken some of the fun out and it's not attracting people anymore.
Certainly when I grew up, it was a lot of fun. So
I remember going to shows and playing cards. And there was a game we used to play. It was great. I can't remember what it is. It was so long ago. But it was just so much fun.
That's my early memories. So you went on to handle professionally yourself, yeah?
I did. I actually met my husband. He had a little Karen bitch that had gone undershot that he was having a hard time finishing, and he hired George to finish her. And that's where I met my husband, Sandy. And he had Karens and Scotties. And, of course, by the time I got to George's, I fell in love with Wires. So our kennel name was Fox Aaron, combination of the Wires and Karens. And we always had a Scotty, but we were not going to breed three breeds. So when I met my husband and we moved into the Ann Arbor area and started our handling business, and I was the handler and groomer, but my husband managed the kennel and eventually the kids when I was on the road. He was the original Mr. Mom.
Wow, that's very cool. And I think something that we still see today in the sport, I think about Luke and Rowan Bagenstoss and Luke and Tammy Seidlitz and all of these people that
are
at the dog show with their kids. We all go as a family, and I love that.
Yeah, and my kids were very social. They could hold a conversation with anybody. And I think because they were around so many different people, obviously my oldest son, he would even go and help me. And he did junior showmanship a little bit more than the second one. And I don't think the third one even went into compete in junior showmanship. Because by the time my oldest was getting into the eighth grade, I wanted to be home and be with them. And that was the time I decided that I think I had to give up the handling. And I wanted to go to their water polo games and swim meets, and I always volunteered in their schools. And family comes first, so we took it. We had a couple slim years.
Yeah.
Because I quit, and my husband had been working for the railroad, but when the handling business was making more money, and we didn't want a nanny. So anyway, we had a couple slim years, and of course, I was fortunate I got the whole terrier group, but, you know, I was lucky if I judged maybe 15 shows in the first years. Now the kids are all grown and gone, and I'm back out as often as I can be.
So let's talk about judging. And I ask this of a lot of people that I particularly respect their opinion. What makes a great one, right, versus a good dog in your mind? What is that distinction?
Well, first of all, they have to have the type. As Annie Clark, as she always said, you have to have the type first. From that type, you pick the best movement. And then to make them be great, to have that little extra, is the showmanship. Now, I don't want a bloodhound showing like a fox terrier. I want a bloodhound to be a bloodhound. So that character and their showmanship has to be along with their type and their breed. But in order for me to call a dog great, they also have to produce. Because I think what we're doing is we're judging breeding stock. And we've had a lot of top winning dogs. But once they produce other top quality specimens, that's when I call them great.
And you just mentioned type. And again, this is one of my favorites, is Rick Beauchamp's book and talking about type
exactly.
versus style.
Yeah, Rick Beauchamp's Five Elements of Type. That's a great book. Everybody should buy it and read it. And he was wonderful. I just loved him. I'm getting emotional. He was very special. The first time I got nominated for the Winky Awards, this is actually my third nomination, but the first time I got this cute little letter from Rick and then a personal little note on it. I'm getting teary-eyed thinking about it. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to frame it because it was very special to me. It meant a lot that he took the time to write a little special note on it.
That is very special.
Yeah.
I think he was special to a lot of us. The very first time I ever judged anything, really, to speak of, I judged the sweepstakes for Clumber Spaniels, my family's breed. And he was judging at the National, and he was judging the regional the day I judged the sweepstakes. And I remember being, like, beside myself with glee, jumping up and down with my mom, because the bitch that I give in the sweepstakes, he gave best opposite over a whole bunch of specials.
Yeah, he was so passionate about the sport. He's sorely missed.
I would definitely agree. And then one of the things that stayed with me from all the things that I read of his was this concept of type versus style, that type is
right.
what makes it a wire fox terrier. Style is your understanding of what a wire fox terrier looks like.
Yeah, your spin on it.
Mm-hmm. So I think that it's important for people to understand when they're talking about type. Type is what your breed is.
Yeah, and type is spelled out in the standard. Phil Marsh once told me there's only one correct type, but there are those elements of style that do add into it.
So let's do an example. I had Jim Reynolds do this with me with Scotties, and it was like the most fascinating thing I've ever done. So give me some examples, if you can think of any, in, say, wires, of two dogs that exude breed type but have different styles.
I think if you took every wire fox terrier that ever went best in show in the last 20 years and put them in the ring, you would see a big difference. They're the epitome of a show dog, first of all. So that's a big selling point on them for when they go into the ring. Well, you know, you take Spot On and you take Harry, the one that... Oh, I can't think of his name, and I know it as well as my own. Well, they were about the same time, and also George had Dominator. Now, Dominator was Spot On's son. They didn't look alike. So Wires probably isn't the right choice of the three, because they're the one that Michael Kemp showed.
Wasn't that Lonesome
yeah.
Dove? Yeah.
Yeah, Lonesome Dove was totally different, too. I mean...
Lonesome Dove is the one I was trying to think of something to compare her to, because she was very... specific in the look that she had, but I couldn't come up with another dog for a comparison.
Yeah, the one Peter Green had, I loved special edition that Ricky owned. In fact, I bred to that dog, and I took a Dominator daughter and bred to him and had 5 out of 5 finished. I thought he was a spectacular dog, special edition, but I also like Spot On a lot. But the Wyatt Fox Terriers probably have the biggest difference.
In the terrier group, you think?
Like I said, if you threw the last 20 years, even the last 10 years of everyone that has won Best in Show, you'd be like, are they the same breed?
Wow. And one of the things that we haven't talked about here on this show, and I think it's, I don't want to say esoteric, but it is very, very specific, and that is talking about sparring terriers.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because last year, Beth Cloven, who's a Scotty person in Michigan, approached me and she said, I'm getting so tired, nobody's sparring terriers anymore. And she knows I do. I don't do it all the time, but I do it because I think it's important. And she said, we've got to do a seminar. So Beth, myself, and the president of the Terrier Club of Michigan, Bobby Green, we all met at my house and we put together a program. And we presented it for the Terrier Club of Michigan and prospective judges. I don't think we had many judges, but we had a good turnout. It was 2 years ago, and it is available to purchase through the Terrier Club of Michigan.
Very good. I could put a link on our website so people could go there to purchase it.
They do give a discount rate for anybody who's planning on judging terriers, but it is so important to do, especially when you have a nice group of terriers and it is not fighting, and not all breeds do it. One of the ways you can tell what breeds you don't spar, obviously you don't spar any of the bully breeds or any of the breeds whose tails come off the back and don't go up at a 90-degree angle. But that's not set in stone. But it's not fighting. It's showing the confidence. And one of my favorite lines in the Fox Terrier Standard is, on the tiptoe of expectation. And that's what we want. That's what we want in the terriers. We want that spunk. We want that fire. But it's confidence. And it's like linemen on a football team saying, well, I slept with your sister last night. You know, that type of stuff. But I own this ring, and I'm allowing you in it. But not for long.
Yes, I showed an Irish Terrier many years ago, campaigned.
Ooh, the toughest of them all.
He was wonderful. You know how sometimes as a handler you have that imaginary best in show lineup in your head, right?
Yeah.
Of all the dogs you've shown. In all honesty, this dog would win best in show in my ring every day. He was amazing. And they talk about the Irish Terrier, they own the ground they stand on, right?
Yep.
This dog owned his ground, my ground, your ground, and everybody else's ground.
Well, it was all his ground, and that's how the terriers should be. And your Irish and your Kerries are real tough, and they're Irish. And just like the Irish people, they can set off real quick, and I can say that because I'm mostly Irish. Where your Cairns and your Westies, they were bred to go to ground together, work together, so they shouldn't back down, but they shouldn't get too nasty with each other. The Scotties, they want to do it all themselves, so they can get pretty tough as well. So you've got to know within the breed what they're supposed to be doing, their personalities. And it's a shame that in Europe, FCI, they don't allow it. And in England, they don't want it anymore. And this is what makes me crazy. Instead of teaching people why we spar them or why we dock a tail or why we crop an ear, we back down and say, oh, okay, it's bad. We won't do it anymore. You know, you win. And the animal rights people are taking control. And let's teach people that sparring is not about fighting. It's just having the dogs come, take a look at each other, and showing the confidence that they have. And I'll tell you, there's nothing more beautiful than seeing two or three terriers standing their ground, looking at each other, and probably saying a few curse words, and then walking away. It's spectacular.
It is. And I'll tell you, I was a sporting dog girl. You know, that's all I knew until I showed this dog. And the owner was reluctant, actually, to have me show the dog because she didn't think I could deal with him because he was so hot. And God love Dennis Springer, my rabbi. He assured her that I could do it, and I managed. But what an amazing experience. And I would love it if you would talk a little bit about teaching the proper way to spar a dog. I mean, I know how I was taught. It was Dennis who taught me. But tell people, okay, so you're in the terrier ring with this dog. This is how you do it properly.
Okay, what I do is if I have a class of, say, Airedales, and I will take two or three, maximum four, never more than four, and you've got to be aware of who's handling them. If you have somebody who's obviously going to be a novice, be cognizant of that and maybe skip it. But if you can see that there's people who can control, and I tell this person, okay, you go stand over in this corner, and you go stand right here, and you go stand over here, and we can always get closer, not too close, take a step forward, and then once they're close enough, and they're locked onto each other, not literally, but they've made eye contact, and I said, okay, that's close enough, just let them look, and then you put them away, or you move from one at a time. Do not ever move them together once they've been looking at each other, and then I'll put those three or four back in line, and bring another three or four out or whatever. Or if I only have four in the ring, then I'll have them go move around the ring one at a time. This is all on the video promoting for the Terrier Club.
I'm definitely going to put a link for that. I think that is so cool.
Yeah, and I think it's done pretty well. I'll have to get the link for you because off the top of my head, I don't know it.
That's okay. Just email it to me and we'll put it up on the website.
Okay, great.
So one of the things that I think is interesting to me as an observation, I mean, clearly terriers are not my thing that I do. I've shown a few. I enjoy the group and love the Irish particularly. I see an awful lot of people that I was told not to do basically baiting their dogs to focus on them rather than focus on the environment around them.
Oh, yeah. The bait has gotten completely out of hand. Completely out of hand. I mean, I walk up to the table and they're shoving food in their mouths. I mean, the only time bait should be used is on a down and back when you're coming back to the judge and show the bait to get the expression. This goes across the board. I mean, all breeds. And I once was showing Karen that I did a lot of winning with, and I was moving down and back, and there was a ring full of Bouviers next to us. And I came back, and he spotted the Bouviers and locked on them. Oh, he looked gorgeous. Our breed judge said, no, have him look at me. And I'm like, oh, okay, but look at how wonderful he looks. I didn't say, I said it to myself, and I got his attention, and he looked at my bait, and then I looked at the guy's tie pin, and he had a Doberman pin on it. And I thought, well, okay, now that's a breed that should stand and probably bait, but it gets frustrating because they should be looking at their environment, but they want to own the whole place.
Right. And I always loved, I can't even remember now, again, who said this or where I read it, but to me defines a lot of the sparring, not just that you are seeing their confidence, but also how much better most of these dogs look standing on their own than when you're fussing with them.
Oh, absolutely. For one thing, when you're baiting them, oftentimes you're baiting them heads up so that you're getting the wrong alignment in their neck and shoulders and they're leaning back or whatever. They look so much better on their own. I remember one time I was exhibiting in Lexington and Ken Murray had, I think it was American Foxhound, in Best in Show lineup. I was not in that lineup. Unfortunately, I had not won, but I was packing up the van. And there were some polo ponies in the distance. And that foxhound saw those polo ponies. I mean, my God. And I was, I don't know, 50 feet away from the ring. I couldn't keep my eyes off the dog. He looked so great standing there just looking at those polo ponies. And it was just wonderful. I don't know if he ended up going best. You'll have to ask Ken.
Okay, I will do that. So you were talking earlier when we were talking about sparring, you were talking about someone who might be a novice, but I think one of the things I'd like you to address is this sort of popular notion that owner handlers can't compete, that the only people that are going to win today are professional handlers, and they get frustrated. So let's talk about that, and let's talk about ways that the owner handler can be more competitive.
I think the owner handlers are doing great. For one thing, especially like in terriers, nowadays with shows every day practically. I mean, when I was handling, maybe there'd be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday show. We'd get home Sunday night, we'd wash out the dogs Monday, and then we'd start grooming Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and leave Thursday or Friday for the show. Nowadays, I don't know when these handlers get time to get the dogs properly trimmed. Or your owner, now they often have jobs, but they also only usually have a couple dogs that they're actually showing at one time. They might have other dogs they have to keep in shape, but I think often their dogs are in much better condition. There's a gal in the East Coast, Leslie Jassett, who had this Sealy bitch that did some winning last year. She did a beautiful job of trimming that Sealy. I don't think anybody could trim a Sealy better. And there's this gal from Canada that had the Mini Schnauzer owner handled and did extremely well. And that dog was in beautiful condition. So I think owner handlers can do it. I get offended when people say they can't because I think they're thinking that judges only put up professional handlers. And yeah, I'm sure there are those that don't have the confidence in what they're doing and they put up professional handlers. But I don't think that's fair to say that owner handlers can't do it. I know they get discouraged and I know the owner handler competition is really popular. But I think it's sad that we even had to do it, had to have that competition because I think they can do it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've met Leslie and seen that particular dog and she is immaculately put down.
Oh, beautiful. And the gal with the miniature schnauzer, I think her name is KG something. And you know there's a gal in Nebraska with the Spinonis. She does a beautiful job. And I think there are plenty of owner handlers out there. lot of the owner handlers aren't really interested in campaigning to make them in the top 10. It takes a lot of money and a lot of travel and the expenses, the shows and the travel and the hotel rooms. And so a lot of the owner handlers are more interested in breeding, and thank God for that.
Yeah. So last question, things that you can think of that we as long-term members of the sport can do to share that knowledge, your recommendation to your peers, or if you will, or my peers, the people who've been at this for a while and maybe sometimes are a little short with the new person and they shouldn't be.
Well, and that's a shame. Make yourself available for one thing. The other thing is people aren't coming up and asking for help anymore. We have all these instant experts, and they're in it for 5 years, and then they get out because they don't go anywhere. You know, they know everything. So it's a two-way street. I think most people in our sport are more than willing to help people out, but people have to be brave and go and ask. I mean, I'm sure somebody could go up to Gabriel and say, you know, I really need help with trimming my whatever, and I'm sure Gabriel would, maybe not at that moment, but would set up a time and be more than willing to help. And just picking Gabriel out of the hat, I'm sure many of the professionals and owner handlers will help. I mean, we do want the sport to succeed. And I'm a big proponent of the bench shows, and I'm sad to see them dying out, because I remember Minneapolis, Milwaukee, and Chicago were the three when I was in the sport. And we'd sit and just listen to people that had been around a lot longer than me and go over dogs, and they'd show you how to examine and what to look for. And you just don't have that time anymore. People are in and out of the ring, and heck, half of them don't even stay if they don't win the 6 to 9 puppy dog class. They're out of there. They don't even watch their own breed. I used to get there so early in the morning, and I'd show my old English, and then I'd go sit and watch other breeds and talk to people, and I'm sure I bothered tons of them.
I know I did. So
I know. I had this book with my old English, and every dog and every judge I showed to, and what I thought, for whatever that was worth, because I didn't have many thoughts back then. And I remember showing it to somebody who I admired and who had been in dogs a long time, and they said, man, are you ever diligent? How am I going to learn if I didn't do that?
Right? I had that same notebook. It's purple and green polka dotted 3-ring binder. I have it. I swear to God.
I have it in her little scrapbook, I guess. It's not anything fancy like scrapbooks of today, but just like a photo binder. And I have it of every judge. When I get home, I'll have to pull it out and look at it again.
I haven't looked at it in a while. I may have to dig that out just because you said that. So.
Yeah, it has names like Larry Downey and Bob Waters and Dennis Grievous, all of those guys.
I look back at some of those old photos, and one of my very, very first photos with any purebred dog was a picture of me with one of my wire hair pointers, and Jenny Line was judging. I'm talking about 1983 here, okay?
Oh, I have these pictures. I had real long hair, like any girl growing up in the early 70s, and I remember getting it cut, and I hated it, and it permed, and it was awful. And I went home to Mom, and her housekeeper trimmed a little bit more, so it was so bad that I wore a scarf for like the first year. And so I have all these pictures of me showing my dog with these scarves on my head because my hair was so bad.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Oh, God, yes. All of the things that we do as young people that we look back and go, dear Lord.
Oh, I know. I want to be 21 and stupid again.
No, I want to be 21 with all I know now. That would be okay.
Yeah, with the body I had at 21.
Yes,
that would
exactly.
Be
oh, my gosh. All right. Well, Peggy, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Laura. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, crew, we're all continually striving for expert level, right? But over at Royal Canin, expertly bred, expertly fed isn't just a tagline. These guys obsess over purebred dogs and the perfect nutrition for each one of them. Royal Canin formulas are developed with your breed's unique needs in mind for superior muscle tone, coat health, and digestion. As breed experts, we know the right nutrition can unlock the magnificence in our dogs. And the best part is, so do the Royal Canin folks. And they're showing their support for purebred dogs every day, including supporting your favorite podcast. So check out the Royal Canin Crown Partners Breeder Rewards Program.
It's a major win for breeders. You can visit my.royalcanin.com to sign up. Membership benefits include 20% savings over in-store prices, quarterly rewards, free puppy kits, exclusive promotions, and a whole lot more. Check it out, crew. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk, brought to you by the Aramedia Group, publisher of ShowSite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.